music you want on a Tuesday. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, thrilled to be joined by eight-time All-Star, future Hall of Famer, Mr. Vince Carter. Our fabulous NBA and WNBA analyst Monica McNutt is going to join us a little bit later in the show. We also have big news out of Brooklyn today. James Harden looks like he's going to give it a go in that pivotal Game 5. So, Vince, a lot to talk about.
Let's
Welcome today. First, though, let's get to what happened in Atlanta. Constructing a winning NBA team is sort of like putting together a show-stopping meal. There are a lot of different ways to go about it. If you're historically a glamour franchise, maybe you have the resources to just go out and grab some lobster and caviar. If you're not, maybe you have to grow the ingredients at home yourself. Either way, once you get the food on the stove, it all comes down to the same thing. When the lights are the brightest, when the world is watching and everything is on the line, can you cook? The Atlanta Hawks keep proving their answer is a bona fide yes. Not only did they walk into Madison Square Garden in the first round and fillet a Knicks team carrying the momentum of all of New York City, they are now sitting just two wins away from the Eastern Conference Finals. Thanks to last night's thrill ride of a win over the Sixers that tied that series at two apiece. And yes, a lot of what happens next year will depend on the health of Joel Embiid's knee, and we'll get to that in a moment. But let's not pretend the Hawks are just bystanders here. Atlanta was down 18 points near the end of the first half last night, and no one would have blinked twice if the team had just acquiesced. This is still a young group. Philadelphia is the number one seed, led by a championship coach and two perennial All-Stars, and certainly the favorite in this matchup. But the Hawks did not acquiesce. The Hawks dug in, handily winning the third quarter to cut the Sixers' lead to two, thanks to some dramatic and terrific two-way play from John Collins, and of course, a push from Trae Young, who continues to show he's not just sizzle, but strength as he fights through a shoulder injury. I loved this sequence with the two of them here in the fourth quarter. Collins hustling for a rebound, gives the ball to Trae, who makes after the drive this pass. I mean, come on. JC then pays it off with the triple. Young actually assisted or scored on the Hawks' final 15 points. And after the game, he talked about exactly the kind of environment, talk, and attitude that has exemplified this Atlanta team.
I mean, we've been fighting, all year. We've been fighting all year, and this team never gives up. We, no matter what the score is throughout the game, we know it's a long game. The NBA is a long game, and it's a 48-minute game. And for us, we just stay level-headed throughout the whole game. Every team's going to make runs. And so for us, I love the way we fight.
Now, while the Hawks were making runs, the Sixers were trying to figure out what was going on with their star. Joel Embiid took a mysterious, not actually that mysterious, trip to the locker room in the first half. And by the second half, it was clear he was having significant trouble with the knee injury that has been hounding him all series. He went an astounding 0-for-12 from the floor during that stretch. No missed basket more costly than the one with just under 10 seconds left, a point-blank layup that Embiid could, well, not lay up. Afterward, Joel said, quote, "I just didn't have lift," adding that not being able to jump for obvious reasons, it's tough. We don't know exactly how Embiid's health will go from here. The injury is a partially torn meniscus, and while honestly shouldn't be able to play well on it at all, he has somehow still managed to have some huge games in this series, and maybe he will be able to come up with another one when things shift back to Philadelphia for Wednesday's Game 5. Of course, the Hawks will be ready for that one, too. As we saw last night, this is a team that knows how to take a meal that is simmering on the stove and turn it up to a full boil. You know what? You can keep your lobster and caviar. This was some good old-fashioned Southern cooking. And as you can see, it'll do just fine. So, Vince, I'm supposed to ask you, since this is now a best of three, do you believe in Atlanta? But, Vince Carter, I know you believe in Atlanta. So tell me why you think that Atlanta can win this series.
I believe in Atlanta. Obviously, it's all based around Joel Embiid and his injury, because if we look what he did in the first three games, he was dominant. He was beating double team, single coverage, whatever he wanted. And even in the first half of Game 4, he was doing what he wanted. And then the second half, Things changed a little bit, and the Hawks were able to play Joel single coverage, and they got to the shooters, and that allowed them to close out on Tobias Harris and to close out on Curry, and that allowed them to just take over the game or make the game easier for Joel Embiid, and you can see their confidence growing. But we have to give a shout out to John Collins, because what he did in the third quarter helped the Hawks get back into the game, and then, of course, Trey took over in the fourth.
I want to take advantage of the fact that you played on this team, Vince. So give us inside the locker room here, especially with John Collins, because we've talked about Trey plenty. He has been just a supernova this playoffs. John Collins' development has been so promising, really, since his rookie year, but it's had stops and starts. What did you see of him when you played with him, and what are you seeing how that all comes to fruition in a game like last night?
Well, first off, I mean, he's just flying under the radar this year, and he's playing great basketball. I remember walking in the door and John just like, hey, let's get it. Let's learn. I want to get better. And he wants to get better and he wants to learn. And we just worked on footwork, technique, catching and shooting threes. And look what he's doing as far as his footwork behind the 3-point line, which maybe a lot of people don't notice. But you showed that play where Trey made the pass to him for three underneath. And he just catches it and shoots it now with confidence. He doesn't hesitate. So what he's done, what Kevin Huerter has done as far as just his maturity and confidence, and Clint Capella defensively and just cleaning up on the glass, scoring. I mean, years ago, did you ever think you could throw the ball to Clint Capella and he's going to get you a bucket and doing what he's doing? And they just believed. I mean, they're playing with a lot of confidence right now, and they should be excited down here in Atlanta.
Well, look, the way they went after Clint, it didn't have immediate payoff. In fact, when they traded for him, you know, Vince, he was hurt, right? So there was a lot of people being like, why exactly did you make this move, especially right now? And guess what? It was for this reason. They knew when this team was finally able to come together, they would get that kind of play. And man, especially since Nick McMillan took over that coaching job, they have been on a rocket ship. You did mention Joel Embiid, of course, as goes him, and this injury is going to go a lot in the rest of this series. 0-for-12 from the field after halftime. And here was Embiid after the game talking a little more about his health. Take a listen.
It happens. Bad game happens. You know, I've been playing well. And, you know, sometimes you just can't control it. Sometimes I thought in the second half a bunch of shots went in and out. You know, there was a couple calls that could have gone, you know, either way. You know, I can do better. I can always be better. But as far as, you know, you being 100%, I don't think that's going to happen. You know, until the year is actually over. I said, I just got to go out and, you know, manage it and just deal with it.
So, Vince, that was the worst shooting half of basketball in the last 25 postseasons. Now, you didn't have
list.
Well, I was going to say, your game wasn't quite that rough, but you're on the list, my friend. 0-for-10, right, in 2006. How does Embiid shake this off going forward in the series? What did you do?
For him, I mean, early in the game, you want to get fouled, get to the free throw line. And it happened in the second half because he was playing great basketball in the first half. And of course, the injury. And you look at that last play. He said, I couldn't dunk the ball. And I noticed he was just searching for fouls because he couldn't get the lift he wanted. And you can see Clint Capella did a great job of avoiding the contact. And nothing was there. And he just blows the layup. So for Joel, it's as much treatment as you can possibly get, and you give your team everything you have. But he's going to need his supporting cast. Ben Simmons is going to have to play better. Obviously, Curry was on fire in the first half, and once they were able to play Joel Embiid single coverage, Hawks were able to get out to the shooter. So they have decisions to make, but I feature Joel Embiid early and see what happens.
Yeah, and first of all, it's such a great point you made about the defense. I do think there's going to be a heart-to-heart between Doc Rivers and Joel Embiid sometime before that next game of, to your point, not hunting for fouls, not having this be in his head. Right, Vince?
And Rachel, I want to say one more thing. We got to think defensively, if he's not healthy, that's going to be a big factor because early in the first three games, the Hawks weren't really able to get the lob play, the pick and roll that they were typically getting. You see them limping there. Now you put Joel Embiid in the pick and roll, and he has a decision to make. Does he play the lob? Does he get up on Trey for the floater? And now that three-point shot opens up. So I suspect the Hawks will go at him early to test that knee out as well.
So interesting. And I will say, Vince, you've been in that arena, obviously, a ton. That place was on fire last night.
It was
so
on fire.
Shout out to the Hawks fans. It was awesome.
It was crazy.
Awesome to see. All right, coming up, we're going to talk James Harden because he has now been upgraded to questionable for game 5 tonight. This is a huge reversal. He was ruled out yesterday. Now he's going to try to give it a go. I will ask Vince what it is like to play hurt in a high-stakes game. So the NBA's all-defensive teams were announced yesterday. First team featuring Rudy Gobert, Draymond Green, Ben Simmons, Drew Holiday, and Giannis. The second team features Joel Embiid, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and Matisse Thybulle. Monica McNutt, welcome to The Jump. Anyone you wanted to see on there that did not make it?
Thanks for the welcome, Rachel. Hey, VC. Dylan Brooks, anyone? I mean, this is the guy who slowed down Steph significantly, obviously, in that play-in game. But just in general, I mean, he has the rep of never backing down from a good defensive matchup. I'm going to assume the fact that he's so willing to use all of his fouls kind of hurt his case, but I think Dylan Brooks should have been on this list.
I'm going to go with Clint Capella. And Rachel, I already know what you're going to say, the Hawks. But Clint Capella, what he's done for his team and allowed them to move on. I mean, he was great against with the Knicks. He was great against the Knicks, you know, as far as defensively, getting them in transition and knocking down three. So where's Clint Capella?
By the way, using all your fouls is part of the game. They let you do that, Monica.
No, not all of them.
All right, let's stick with Kawhi, but also his teammate Paul George. Last night, PG-13 and Kawhi each dropped 31 in another win at home to even up the series. While a lot of the focus is on PG because he's such an X factor, if he has a great game, it makes a huge difference. You gotta check Kawhi's numbers between wins and losses, because even in losses, he's very, very good. But look at him in wins. The man has been nuclear, averaging nearly 34 points a game on 65-45-90 shooting splits. Now in losses, again, more human, averaging 26 on 48-32-85 shooting splits. But Vince, the Clippers now tied 2-2 after trailing 0-2. So what do you think has changed for them that they are now in it in this series?
I mean, it's easy to say home cooking. That's easy. But I give the credit to Ty Lue for making the adjustment of playing small ball. They worked in game 3, and they started with it in game 4. And here's why I say that. It put Gobert in a situation where he can't get to the help side blocks or in the paint fast enough because he's leaving shooters. And when he did step in the paint, penetrate, pitch, Marcus Morris, open 3. Batum, open 3. So they put him in a situation where Gobert didn't know what to do, and I thought it was genius to start with that. And now it opened the paint up for Kawhi and PG to get into the paint whenever they want it.
VC, I don't know which one comes first, if it is the offensive decisions in terms of that small ball or what it has allowed them to do defensively, because I've been impressed in the last two games with the way, literally, the Clippers are flying around defensively, 1-5. We know that Pat Bev, we know that Paul George in spots and Kawhi Leonard have made it very difficult on Donovan Mitchell, but in general, there's not been a lapse in terms of their defensive rotations and missing their assignments. And to me, that energy on the defensive end has allowed them to get up and down the floor, out in transition, get to those spots where they're knocking down threes. And so the small ball thing is huge. I'm noticing it on the defensive side of the ball just as much.
Well, look, it is going to be fascinating because the Utah Jazz earned that number one seed, right? So Dallas lost the last 4 of the last 5 games in that first round series. The Jazz are not the type of team that has lost 4 out of 5 games this season. So for the Clippers, even though they've gotten back in it, for them to win, they will have to win 4 of the final 5 games of the series. It is a steep hill, but they are starting to climb it. All right, we are going to talk James Harden right after this break because he is now cleared to play tonight. Vince will share his thoughts on the pressure Harden is facing in this pivotal game 5. Keep it locked. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols here with Vince Carter, Monica McNutt, and let's get to the biggest news of the day involving James Harden. Our senior insider Adrian Wojnarowski says James is cleared to play in Game 5 against the Bucks tonight. This is huge. Woj reporting Harden worked his hamstring through shoot-around without an issue. He will do the same on the court prior to tip tonight. Vince, this man was ruled out officially yesterday. I got the notice in my email inbox. You have been in James Harden's shoes. What is it like to try to play hurt in such a high-pressure game?
It's the playoffs, and you want to do whatever you can for your team. You just want to be careful, and obviously he knows how important it is, but trying to play through it is difficult. It's difficult because there's some of the things that comes natural to you that you can't do anymore. For me, it was jumping. So for James Harden, he's a point guard. He uses his body, his quickness, and his ability to get in the paint. And you see there, once he got in the paint and stepped, that's when you find out how he actually feels, because you're going through shoot around, you go through everything, but when you have to guard somebody or beat someone off the dribble, that's when that hamstring will be tested.
You know, I applaud James Harden for pushing, and I certainly understand the urgency, guys, but I do wonder, is it absolutely vital? I mean, I think we've gotten lulled to sleep just a little bit on the capabilities of one Kevin Durant, who, although the Elias stats bear out that when teams are missing two of their top three scorers, they only win like 25% of the time. But if one of those top three is Kevin Durant, I think you still have a really strong chance. And so for me, I'm at, okay, James Harden is going to go tonight, but will he be able to play tonight are two different conversations in terms of the duration and the intensity of the basketball game.
Honestly, to me, what might tip that balance isn't as much whether James Harden is or isn't on the court or how much of James Harden he really is. What is the officiating going to be like? Mm. And I want to make this clear, I'm not saying will it be fair or unfair for either team. Obviously, there is a range of how games are officiated in terms of physicality. That is what I am talking about. How much are they, quote, letting the guys play versus calling a game tightly? I was courtside for game 4. I can tell you, they let those guys play. It was one of the
most old school basketball.
Physical, old school basketball games I have been at in a long time. So, Vince, I was courtside for your games. Those were rough and tumble games at the beginning of your career. Yes. At the end of your career, not quite so much, right? That game on Sunday was an old school basketball game, and that meant that PJ Tucker, who is an old school basketball player, could get in Kevin Durant's airspace, physical space, body space, hip space, ankle space in a way that, frankly, absolutely, Monica, in a way that we did not see earlier in the series. And because of that, it made it very hard for Kevin Durant to win that game on his own once Kyrie went down. So to me, yes, James Harden playing will make a huge difference. Of course, he's James Harden, but I want to see how this game is officiated tonight, because if it is allowed to be physical, which I will tell you, just as a basketball fan separate from this series, I like physical playoff games. That will make a difference on what Kevin Durant can do if PJ Tucker gets an early couple fouls, right? And whether he has to sit or be away. I will say this, Vince, when we talk about James Harden, his organizational skills on the court, his point guard skills, that is something that was missing really in the games he hasn't played this series. With not a great hamstring, can he still do all of that stuff? If he doesn't have to, does he not have to move as much, but still can he do that kind of thing?
I think early in the game, he could facilitate and let that hamstring get warm, get comfortable in live action. And then after that, you just see where you are as a player. And if you can beat a guy off the dribble, and if you just need to spot and shoot, and like Monica said, there's Kevin Durant out there, and he's going to draw a lot of attention. And or because James Harden is who he is, they're going to just sit under him and make KD beat Tucker one-on-one. Yeah. So the wonderful thing about James Harden is he is good at drawing fouls.
Yes, he is.
He's drew it. So the physicality on them, he can get their team into the penalty early because of his ability to draw fouls. So I think early in the game, he's going to facilitate, get warm, and then we'll see where he goes from there.
But, VC, do you think, though, that the Bucks would game plan for him differently if they knew he was purely a facilitator? Like, when I think of James Harden's games, he's able to be such a dynamic facilitator because you got to respect him from 45 feet away from the rim. Right. If he doesn't have his legs and can't score that way, then I can plan for you as a facilitator better than I can for you as a scorer, or just one or the other.
But remember this, James Harden can still shoot the ball. The hammy still work to shoot the ball. You can still shoot. I think with the hamstring, more so, is just pushing off and beating your man. His step back game, he doesn't need a lot of space. James Harden doesn't use a lot of lift on his shot. You know, that's one of the things, like a Dominique Wilkins,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Somebody like that who had a lot of lift where the hamstring is into effect. So, I mean, it just depends on, you know, his pain tolerance is another yeah. factor in this and what he can and can't do. I mean, he's giving it a go. My only thing is I just hope he's healthy enough and we don't want to see another Anthony Davis situation
mm-hmm.
where
right.
he goes
mm-hmm.
down and the Nets do not have him for the rest of the series.
Right.
Like you said earlier, Monica.
Yeah, and look, we did see that with AD, right? And these injuries are connected. So AD had an Achilles injury, obviously, all the way back on Valentine's Day, took a big chunk of time off, tried to come back. You know, he had hip injuries, thigh injuries, sort of, you know, little nagging things, ankle, right, at one point. So obviously when that side of your body is a little bit weakened, you can see with James Harden, are we going to have other sort of compensatory injuries that come into play for him? I will say this about James. The man is an Iron Man. He has played, we looked it up today, our researcher Michael Schwartz, 94% of the games that his team has played over the course of his career, whatever team he has
wow.
been on, he has played in. Marvel
wow,
like
wow.
did a shoe collab with him because he's such an Iron Man. This is a man who wants to be on the court. And I do admire the fact he is trying to be there tonight. And he obviously knows, not just for the Brooklyn Nets, but for him. I mean, he's been trying to win a title for a very long time.
Very long
this
time,
is
yeah.
probably one of his best chances to do so. He wants to help them get past this series. We will find out if he is going to be able to. It is time, friends, to play one of our favorite games here on The Jump. Something, nothing, or everything. Let's get to another story from Woj. This is about the league exploring rule changes on unnatural shot motions. All right, so per Woj, the league wants to limit the ability of players, including stars like, oh, I don't know, James Harden, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, to lean backward and sideways, for example, to initiate contact and get the free throw. Monica, Trae Young has been one of the brightest stars of this playoffs. Luka Doncic put on a show in the first round. Is this something, nothing, or everything?
It's everything, Rachel, and I mean that in the most negative way. I absolutely hate this. Like, I hate it. I don't know yeah. about you, VC, but I feel
no,
like you're now encroaching on guys' ability to play the game and be crafty. Listen, I was up close and personal to the Knicks-Hawks series.
Yes.
I was just as agitated as anybody else with Trae Young, but that is a part of his game, and all the names that you just listed, Rachel, they are great players, and that's part of their game. I was with the league on the kickout. Okay, take that out. I was mm-hmm. with them on the Zaza Pachulia rule. I was with that. But this, to me, only opens Pandora's box with more subjectivity. I thought the point of these rules at this point, as we saw with Nikola Jokic being ejected, was to eliminate the subjectivity.
Right.
This, to me, is going to be a hot mess.
And what it's going to do to these scores or those guys that you listed, they're going to have to figure out another way to be effective as far as drawing fouls, because Trae knows if I speed up on the pick and roll and just slow down, when that defender's getting there, stop. And then throw the ball to the rim.
Right.
And it is, it's, I mean, you look at it and it's, I mean, I'm with these guys. And so I root for them, but you know, when you see it, you're just like, oh man, come on, man. it kind of takes the fun out of the game because they're superstars and they're already tough to guard. And it's impossible as a defender to try to guard these guys when that's allowed. So at least if they get the call, it has to go on the side.
Well, it's interesting, Monica. You just called that the Zaza Pachulia rule. We all know why of what happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
I have to assume if this goes through, it will be called the Trae Young rule, or at least referred to it that way. And I think it's notable just because Trae is the one, I think, who'd be most effective. He's the smaller guy. And by the way,
mm-hmm.
he's not small. I'm 5'4". I'm small. But he is smaller on that court. And so he has to do more things to sort of make his game break through than a bigger guy like James Harden. Or Luka Doncic is a lot bigger than I think people realize when he's on the basketball
right.
court and can barrel through. I am curious whether this is going to be, hey, we just won't call the fouls anymore, and so they won't have that and get to the free throw line, or if it is, we are going to start calling these as offensive fouls, and they will be fouls on the offensive player. I don't know if that's been clarified or not, but obviously that would have a huge impact on which way they decide to go there. So we will find out. All right, coming up, we're going to talk a little Boston Celtics because, I mean, this is just so unusual. Brad Stevens is going to choose his own successor as head coach. We've got some candidates for that job opening to go through. We'll discuss it next. Donovan Mitchell, 6 consecutive 30-point games that ties Karl Malone's franchise playoff record. Monica, will he make it 7 straight the next game?
Rachel, he's going to have to if the Jazz want to win this ballgame, considering the way
what
that the Clippers
did y'all
are playing.
Just go right there?
Right?
Yeah, like, he's got to. There's nothing, like, I mean, this stat is impressive, but it's not because it's cute or empty. His team has needed this from
yeah.
him.
Right. Right. I agree. I think he's definitely capable of doing it. It's just, will he run out of gas? Because he's working so hard to score. That's just my concern.
He's working so hard, and we've had like little tiny injuries, sort of knickknack things with him. He's clearly fighting. On the other side, Kawhi Leonard obviously had a little knee issue toward the end of the game. We will see what happens in the next game in this series. All right, according to Fox Sports, the Orlando Magic will interview Jason Kidd for their vacant head coaching spot this week. The Lakers have granted them permission. Also, near the Celtics practice facility in Boston, this billboard went up campaigning for Becky Hammon or Kara Lawson to be the next head coach. Again, Kara has worked on the Celtics staff. She is just fantastic, Monica. Who do you think is the best fit to coach the Celtics?
I don't necessarily have a name yet, Rachel, although I like the connection that Kara has, but I have three C's that my candidates should have. They've got to be able to connect with this squad. They've got to be creative in terms of the offense and the talents of these guys. And they've obviously got to be able to convert in terms of everything that they're doing in practice and behind the scenes has to translate on the basketball court. Kara, I kind of like that idea.
So this answer, I am no way, shape, or form trying to take this coach away from the current team, which is Nate McMillan from the Atlanta Hawks.
Okay.
Because I think the Atlanta Hawks more than likely will try to keep him.
Yes.
But I think what Nate McMillan has proven and shown, what he can do with the Trae Young.
Yep.
Just imagine, you know, what he could do because he's defensive minded. He has all the pieces. He has all the young talent offensively. Nate McMillan would be a good candidate, as well as Becky Hammon. I think Becky Hammon proved that she can handle a team. I think she won the Summer League some years back ago with the Spurs, obviously, and she took control of that team and did a great job. So, I mean, I think there's some great candidates out there. I mean, there's always Chauncey Billups and Sam Cassell.
Yep.
Sam Cassell, who has put his time in as well. But I think Nate McMillan is showing that he can handle superstars and take them to the next level. If the Hawks don't take him or snatch him up, maybe so.
So much about this, though, Rachel, is also not just the head guy, but the staff, right?
Yep.
The head guy or gal, may I add. So I think if you can pepper in some of those names together, then we're really starting to cook with hot sauce.
Well, that is true. Now, Kara, of course, has a job as the head coach for her team at Duke. So
busy.
I think for her to move, she would have to be the head coach in Boston. Who knows if she wants to do that? The Nate McMillan thing is interesting. Also, whether he ends up going somewhere or not, because as you point out, he's such a great fit in Atlanta, and I have to think ownership will do everything they can to keep him, but he is still have that interim tag. And if I'm Nate McMillan, I'm not saying no to other job interviews if they come up. So if there's a bidding war for me, that's not the worst thing in the world either. Just again, it's amazing when you look at a difference a year makes where, you know, the Pacers got rid of him, even though he made the playoffs with that team, even though he had just recently gotten a contract extension. And here he is now, has his team neck and neck, ready for fighting for the Eastern Conference Finals. And possibly, as you note, Vince, a bidding war breaking out for him. I do think it is interesting that Brad Stevens is hiring his replacement. That is very unusual in the NBA. And look, one of the questions that was asked, Tim Bontemps asked at the press conference where Danny Ainge announced he was retiring and that Brad would be moving on to the front office. Tim asked both ownership and people front-facing at that press conference, hey, why is Brad Stevens better for the franchise to be in the front office instead of on the sideline? And there wasn't a great answer to that or a complete answer to that question when he asked it, but it tells me the fact that they made that move, that they felt that, and maybe Brad himself felt, that his voice had kind of worn out there and that somebody else needed to bring a different layer to coaching guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So it is going to be interesting who they pick next.
Absolutely.
Because obviously those are huge assets for that franchise, and someone needs to help move them on to the next level, to an NBA Finals level stage. All right, guys, here's what The Jump recommends for today on the ESPN app. Our analysts breaking down the remaining teams in the postseason, sharing their best bets for the playoffs. This is actually a really fun piece. Everyone like took a team in a series and made like some pretty bold predictions, so go check it out. It's great. We're watching The Jump, and we'll be back right after this.
Hi.
All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. Damian Lillard and Draymond Green seasons are over, but hey, they could be back in action soon. Both are among the initial commitments to Team USA for the Olympics this summer. Vince, both you and Monica working for NBC over in Tokyo. Do you guys Do you guys think players will be eager to join Team USA or hesitant because it has been a year and a half and they need some rest?
I think they'll be hesitant just because they need some rest, but that's a great start right there with Dame Lillard, who was just a pure scorer. Mm-hmm. And then you get a guy like Draymond Green, who's the point forward, who makes things happen. And now these guys can just go out there and shoot the ball all over the arena. So it's just a great start. But I think you'll see some hesitation, and you'll get guys committing late before just jumping right on it.
Yes.
Hesitation, and rightfully so, guys, as we look around the league at the amount of injuries and to big-time names this season. However, the other part about this that I also thought is, will Dame be doing any recruiting? Because we all agree that either he needs some help in Portland or he got to find a new home if he's trying to get to that upper echelon in terms of contending for a ring.
It's no small thing. Mm-hmm. Team USA has been the base. It was the base of Miami's group down there with LeBron, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade, and it was the base of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving's friendship with DeAndre Jordan. It is the way we have seen some of these teams form. Maybe Dame can convince someone, come to Portland. Come on over there. I will say that I asked Steph Curry, and this was, frankly, 2 years ago, about, hey, do you want to compete in Tokyo? Because Tokyo was supposed to happen last summer. And he was saying, oh, my God, I've never done it. I would like to do it. I'd like to win an Olympic gold medal. It is going to be tough for him, for Clay, to sort of make the case of, after all of the injuries and all of what has happened with that team, that they should now go put themselves on the line over in Tokyo. But Draymond's doing it, so we will find out. All right, tonight let's talk a little Bucks and Nets, because as we have talked about throughout this show, it is a massive Game 5 tonight. Kyrie will not play, but even with James Harden giving it a go, we don't know how healthy he will be. So, Monica, who would you say is under more pressure in Game 5? Giannis or Kevin Durant?
This one's easy for me, guys. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo / Coach Budenholzer. I think the Milwaukee Bucks are under all the pressure. If they can't get it done, it will be said, you couldn't even do it with just 1.5, maybe. Right. We'll see how James looks of that big three. So it's the pressure, all the pressure's on the Bucks to me.
And I'm gonna go on the other side and say it's KD, because they formed this team for a reason, and they want to win. And now that everybody's down, and I think KD needs to step up, because if they don't win tonight, and it goes back to Milwaukee, oh boy, that's a tough one, closeout game. But James Harden makes things a little easier for the Brooklyn Nets and the KD, where I don't think he needs to score 45, but I think he still needs to be aggressive and come out early and often and going at PJ Tucker. Yeah, if he's going to be physical, okay, draw the fouls, get to the free throw line, get your team in the penalty. So I think for Kevin Durant, because the Nets, we expect the Nets to win. This is an important game to win on their home floor.
I mean, look, if we was going to flip this question kind of in the other direction of, like, who, if you had to pick someone to have a big game, would it be Giannis or KD? I have a hard time ever betting against Kevin Durant. KD. He's Kevin Durant. He is the most potent, most dangerous scorer and shooter and everything else you want to talk about in the league. So I feel like if you're going to say, oh, my God, who can really dig down and do it? Kevin Durant, it's hard to not say him. But what do you think, Monica?
The one caveat, though, Rachel, is kind of what we've seen with James Harden. Remember, I believe that KD played 3 sets of back-to-backs during the regular season. So I'm wondering about the durability and the overall conditioning playing at this heightened level with so much pressure on him. But I would agree with you. But that is the one asterisk that I have in the back of my mind.
That is interesting. Now, you talked, too, about the pressure on the Bucks as an organization. A second-round exit is not what Milwaukee was looking for. And I understand it's not the greatest draw in the world to get Brooklyn. But as you guys point out, you're getting Brooklyn without at least one of its stars and maybe a half of another one of its stars. Vince, what do you think the mood is going to be like in Milwaukee if they lose this series after everything they have done in the past couple years to try to get to an NBA Finals?
Where do we go from here? And obviously, you're going to say, what's Giannis going to do? I know everybody's going to say that, but I think they will respond. We saw the response they had for Game 3 and Game 4 after their losses in Brooklyn. So I look for them to just come out and just let it all hang out. You're on the road, just let it all hang out.
Well, there's so many layers, so much intrigue in this series. Is Mike Budenholzer's job on the line? What is James Harden going to do?